Welcome back, everybody. This is the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Malek Green, in for Harold Fisher. On the Insight segment tonight, we have seen it, and some people are living right in the middle of it. An uptick in crime happens when the weather heats up.
We're extremely grateful for him. I think you can imagine the fear that residents in these blocks have. Probably one of the biggest fears that a person could have, whether they're in a home alone or another person in the home, is someone breaking in and harming them or their loved ones, and perpetrating a sexual assault, heinous crime, violent crime. And the fact that neighbors were vigilant, watching out for each other, working with the police to make sure we apprehended this individual, we probably wouldn't be here today but for that neighbor.
All right, that's Mayor Bowser talking about a major break in that case in Mount Pleasant involving a man accused of attacks and assault in that community. Her Top Cop is here with us this evening. D.C.'s Police Chief Peter Newsham is our guest on Insight. We are taking your phone calls. The number to call to ask the police chief a question, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Police Chief Newsham, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Malette, thanks for having me on. This is great. I was just saying before we started, what a great radio voice you have. who knew? We all see you on TV, but this is...
I appreciate that very much, but I want to get right down to business and talking about that major break in Mount Pleasant. This guy that you got, Lester Wilkerson, has a long rap sheet.
Yeah, so, you know, for people who don't know the story, it's a horrible story. A couple weeks ago, he broke into two homes, sexually assaulted women that were in the homes, right in the exact same block. You know, that's the type of crime that just completely stirs a community with fear, you know, to know that something like that's going on. People in the privacy of their own homes being attacked is just probably the worst thing you can think of.
Okay, but this guy has really targeted this community, this same neighborhood, for over a decade. You have cases just going way back.
Yeah, like you said, it's a repeat violent offender. These are the ones that really frustrate police officers when you have a guy who's a repeat violent offender, goes out there, you know, attacks two women. Yeah, I got to tell you the story about this guy who helped us out yesterday. So yesterday around 2:30, he breaks into another home. This would be the third
home.
Yep. There's two women in there.
A mother and daughter.
Mother and daughter. Alleges that he has a weapon, scares the heck out of them. Thankfully, they ran, they screamed, and lo and behold, one of their neighbors who was listening. Matter of fact, more than one neighbor reacted to this. I talked to another guy that was out there today. He did the same thing. He just didn't happen to run into the suspect. But this one guy sees the suspect leaving the house and talk about heroically follows this guy. As he's following him, the suspect says, "Hey, I have a gun." And the guy continued, this hero continued to follow him. And then he picks up a brick and he throws it at this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He continues to follow him. All the while he's calling the police. Police get to the scene. They're able to chase this guy down and get him into custody.
Why do you think it took a while, I guess you would want to say, to catch this guy? What was the thing? Because if he has a history of being in that neighborhood, you should get him.
It was a couple of weeks, which is actually pretty quick,
mm-hmm.
To be able to close, particularly a serial predator like this. So I was thankful that we were able to get him into custody as quickly as we did. I think we had, in that community, I think all eyes and all ears were, kind of focused on this if something was happening in the community. And I think that, you talk about all of the things that were helpful in closing this case. First of all, it was some of the folks in the neighborhood had invested in security cameras. Those were beneficial in us getting images out to the public. The victims in this particular case, for them to be wise enough to make noise, to let the community know, hey, something's going on here.
What do you say
about
this
neighbor?
Yeah, that's what I want to get to.
How about
what do you say about people getting more involved, making calls, calling police with tips, seeing something a little off and reporting? How are we doing in the city, particularly in wards 7 and 8, with your getting cooperation from the community, which you have always said and all law enforcement says is crucial to closing cases.
Oh, it's the key. And so it's better now than it's ever been.
Really?
Yeah, and as you know, I've been doing this for 30 years, and we had some tough times. You know, back in the early 90s, the mid-90s, people did not want to cooperate with the police at all. There's still some folks in the community that don't want to cooperate with the police, but by and large, people are giving us information on these cases. And, you know, if you look at the closure rates for our crimes here in the district, our violent crimes, they're pretty high. When you compare them to the national average.
Okay. I want to talk about the violent crime because I know we had a really bad Memorial Day holiday weekend with a lot of shootings, children getting caught up in the gunfire and violence. Where are we? Because we do see this uptick every time the weather gets warm. We're going into some more hot weather. School's almost out. We're a couple of weeks out. How are you going to attack this problem that we see?
Yeah, so, you know, Memorial Day weekend, we had a couple of incidents that really kind of made the numbers scary, to say the least. We had a 3,500 block of Wheeler Road. We had four people that were shot. One of them that was killed was a 15-year-old boy.
That's right. Was it Maurice Scott?
Maurice Scott.
There is now a mural on that street.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
It's a beautiful mural, but unfortunately, we shouldn't see a 15-year-old immortalized on a mural because he was shot dead. Innocent.
Shouldn't never have to happen in our community. What a tribute, though. So whoever created that mural, it's a beautiful, beautiful mural.
No arrest in that case, Chief.
No, and that's one of the things we'll ask. If anybody saw or heard anything on that day, as insignificant as they may think it is, they got to reach out and give us some information. So in that particular case, and I think many folks out in the community have seen the video that was released in that case, talk about brazen. We're talking 10:30 on a Sunday morning, Memorial Day weekend. Where are most people Sunday morning? Most people are in church.
Right.
And this kid was at a local convenience store. Some guy decides that for whatever reason, he's going to get out of a car with a rifle and open fire in that community. Takes a young kid's life and sends, he sent three women to the hospital, one of them being a 9-year-old girl. And if people can't get angry about that and want to help the police in a situation like that, and I think there are people who are angry about that kind of thing, they need to.
And I want people, look, don't sit here and just listen to the chief. I want you to ask him a direct question. This is your opportunity to do so right now. Give us a call here at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Again, the number to call, 202-319-7810. We have D.C.'s police chief, Peter Newsham, here to answer all of your questions. You said the person who was doing the shooting had a rifle.
Yep. High-powered rifle. And that kind of thing, you know, that's talk about dangerous. Those high-powered rifles were made for one thing, and they were made for killing people in a warfare situation. So they're high velocity, they travel great distances, and if they hit a human being, the intention of those weapons is to kill
somebody.
How
easy is it to get a rifle in the city?
We're lucky in D.C. because they are 100% prohibited in the District of Columbia.
Some of the toughest gun laws in the country.
And we don't see the rifles as frequently as we see the handguns in the city, so they're not out there. And I think in some other communities, they may even be seen a lot more than we do. But I can't overemphasize the fact that it's extremely dangerous, you know. And then we go back to Memorial Day. The next day, 2:30 in the afternoon, a car drives up on a group of guys that are hanging out in the community near one of our rec centers in Barry Farm, opens fire on the group. And we ended up sending five more people to the hospital, one of them being another 15-year-old kid.
Yeah, okay.
That case, we've made some pretty significant progress in. We feel very comfortable that we're going to be able to close that case.
Uh-huh.
The case, Maurice Scott's case over on Wheeler Road, we're really urging the public, if they know something, to reach out to us and let us know.
And let's hope that happens very soon for his family and for the community's sake. 202-319-7810, that's the number to call to ask the chief a question or give a comment. 202-319-7810. I'm going to push this first line. Caller, what's your name and what's your question or comment? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
You're on the air. What's your name?
Hi, my name is Maya.
Okay. What's your question or comment, Maya?
Hi, I'm a long-term D.C. resident. I've been here for 43 years. And my question is, well, it's kind of a statement and a question, I guess.
Okay, go ahead.
Answer. Why is it that in the urban areas, the police are more reactive than proactive? But I'm noticing in the new areas now that are being revitalized and gentrified, I see police activity all the time, like they're being proactive. I'm
That's a great question. Let's have the chief address it, Maya. Let's listen.
Yeah, I think that you know, some of that, Maya, might be your perception. We do a lot of work. Actually, most of the work that we will do this summer is some of the communities that have struggled with violence the most. I don't know if you know anything about our Summer Crime Initiative, but every year we select five or six areas in the city where we don't just focus police resources, but we focus resources from around the city to provide opportunity like jobs, mental health treatment, substance abuse treatment, all of the city services that are available to assist human beings we bring into these areas. And the areas that we selected this year, actually, there's one in our 5th district, which is the Langston Carver neighborhood, two in our 6th district, one in the Fort DuPont Benning area, one in the Benning Ridge Marshall Heights area, and then three in the 7th district, which is historic Anacostia, Congress Heights, and Washington Highlands. So that, in my opinion, is about as proactive as it gets with regards to a police department. So I hope that you're not getting the perception that we're not being proactive with regards to policing here in Washington, D.C.
All right, let's take our next caller at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Hello? Hi, you're on the air. What's your name? Caller, are you there? Okay, let's go to the next caller here. Hi, this is Molek Green on the Insight segment. You're on the air. What's your name?
Carlin.
Hi, what's your question or comment?
Okay, so my question is, so with wanting people to, you know, if they know anything, see anything, hear anything, but unfortunately we still do live in the era where it's the no snitching code.
Okay.
So how can people feel comfortable and safe enough to know that any information that they do provide won't come back, like, against them, or like it won't be leaked out that, oh, well, so-and-so said so-and-so?
Great question, Chief.
That is a great question. And truth be told, Carlin, you know, there is still, and we completely understand that at MPD, there is a certain degree of fear with giving information where you think you might be putting yourself or even somebody in your family in jeopardy. So what we do is, if you want to give information anonymously, you can do that. If you see, for example, that somebody who's out there and they have a gun, you can call 727-9099. You can give that information anonymously. You don't have to give your name. Whenever you call 911 or 311 and you want to report something to the police, you are not required to give your name in that situation. So
they may ask you, the officer may ask you, but you're not required.
Absolutely. And matter of fact, if you call 911, they are going to ask you for your name and your phone number, but you're not required to provide it.
You're not required to provide it. You just need to provide whatever vital information you have.
Yep, that was a great question.
Okay, great question. Okay. Thank you so much, Carlin, for that question. All right, let me get to 202-319-7810. Let me get to another caller here, Chief. Good evening. Welcome to Insight. What's your name?
My name is Red.
Hey, Red. What's your question or comment?
My question is, are there any cutting-edge advancements in the area of non-lethal weaponry? I know that the tasers, the officers have them, a good number of them, especially sergeants. But and I have some cutting-edge ideas in terms of apprehending individuals without using lethal force. Where are we at in that regard?
Good question.
So, you know, the number one thing you can do with regards to the use of lethal force is to train, and then train again. And we do that at MPD. We send our officers through scenario-based training at the training academy. We do equip them with a number of less than lethal options. They could, our officers carry pepper spray. Like you mentioned, they carry the taser. We also have what is called a 40-millimeter round that we can use if somebody has an edged weapon. We have those deployed across the city on a regular basis. But at the end of the day, you can give police officers all the tools in the world, but you really have to train them. And the way that you train them in the scenario-based training is you get the officers to think about these things before they happen, so they know exactly what they're going to do when it does occur. So in the scenario-based training, a police officer will go in. It's in a live scenario. We have actors playing different roles.
How often does this happen?
Our police officers have to go to this once a year.
Okay.
So and that's unusual in police departments. A lot of police departments don't have recurring training. So they get it in the academy, of course, but then when they come out, that gets reemphasized once a year. And so we've actually brought reporters through there, and you should come through to check it out. And so you never know in these scenarios whether or not you're going to have a situation where you're going to have to make an arrest, where somebody's going to do something reactive in a vehicle. And what we do is we film the whole thing, and then we go through and we evaluate it with the officers to say, you did this properly, you did this improperly. And so I think that, I mean, if you look at last year in Washington, D.C., we had the lowest number of fatal uses of force that we've had in as long as I can remember. We had two. And our goal is to have zero. Unfortunately, in this business, that doesn't always happen. But, you know, that's our intention, is to have none.
Our guest tonight, D.C.'s Police Chief Peter Newsham. We still have him here. I want you to get in your question or your comment before the police chief has to leave, and we have to end this program. So the number to call is 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment, your opportunity to get the chief to answer your questions. So we're going to take a little bit of a break just for a second here for our WHUR listeners. We're going to go to the original Quiet Storm with Jeff Brown on WHUR. You will still be able to hear the program once you call that number. And we will continue with the police chief to talk about the face of MPD next. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Alec Green, in for Harold Fisher. This is tonight's Daily Drums Insight segment, and our guest this evening, D.C.'s Police Chief Peter Newsham. It's so wonderful having him here to answer your questions directly, and so we have some callers still holding at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Hello, caller. What's your name?
Hello, my name is Courtney.
Hi, Courtney. What's your question or comment?
My question is, what mental health trainings, if any, do the officers receive after going through traumatic events? And what things have you all done in the community in regards to children working with officers? You know, how they used to have officer friendly. What other type of programs do they have?
Mental health training?
Yep. So we have what's called crisis intervention officer training, and our officers do it on a volunteer basis. Right now, we have over 800 officers that have been specifically trained in dealing with folks who have mental health issues. The reason behind getting volunteers to participate in the program, because you want somebody who really wants to do this kind of work to be doing it. And what they learn in the training is they learn how to deal with folks who have mental health issues, because somebody who has a mental health issue may automatically look at a police officer as being a threat, and they may act in a way that could create a situation where the police officer may use force and it's not necessary.
And tell me about the training that the officer receives to handle someone who may have a mental health challenge, and, you know, to be able to identify it and to be able to make a better judgment.
And the key to it really is to give somebody time and space. You know what I mean? So if you come across somebody and you identify them as having a mental health issue, you want to give them time and space. And you know, a lot of things that young police officers in particular don't realize is that you have all the time in the world. We may have to block streets, you know what I mean? We may have to create room. But if you give most people time and space, particularly people who are challenged with different mental health issues, you're going to be able to resolve the situation without having to use force. And at the end of the day, you know, that's what our goal is.
And what about the officers who, look, as a reporter, 30 years in this community, I've seen some stuff that I take home and it's traumatizing. I cannot even imagine what police officers see and experience. How are they able to handle the job?
That's a great question. And I think police departments now are doing a much better job of thinking about their employees and the trauma that police officers face on a daily basis just from seeing the types of things that you can see. If you can imagine, you know, during the course of a work week for a police officer, they can see all kinds of things. They can see a human being who's been shot and killed. They can see somebody who's been stabbed. They can see young children.
In the worst scenarios.
Yeah. You have to be really smart about making sure that your police officers are healthy. We have an employee assistance program at MPD. Yeah. So if we see one of our officers and they seem to be, and they most human beings will show symptoms when they're, you know, when this is starting to affect them. For example, they could be, their work performance could change. Their attitude could change. You may see indications of maybe alcohol abuse or something like that. And what we do is we direct our officers who are facing those challenges into an employee assistance program, because we really want our police officers, when they're out on the street, to be healthy. We want them to be healthy physically, but we also want them to be healthy mentally so that they're dealing with people in an appropriate
way. And I know
way.
Courtney had a question about children, too.
I get the question all the time about officer friendly. I don't know if Courtney knows this or not, but last year was our this school year was our first full year, because we started we brought back the officer friendly program last spring, and so we did it a little bit last spring, and then we've been able to do it a whole school year this year. And what it is our officers go to the elementary schools, they meet with the kids in the elementary schools at all the grades. They teach them, you know, various safety tips about, you know, internet safety, safety when you're at home, not hitting each other, those kinds of
things. I remember Officer Friendly when I was a kid in D.C. schools.
And I'll tell you why.
152 years ago.
I'll tell you why we brought it back. Yeah. Because, at the end of the day, I'll just go real quick on this. At the end of the day, we do an assembly, and our side-by-side band, which is all police officers, mm-hmm. plays for the kids. And these kids, they love it. I got to tell you, I've been to a couple of them. The kids really enjoy it, but the reason
that side-by-side band is no joke.
They're
really good,
aren't they? Good?
And they play good go-go music
too.
I like. They're great.
So the reason I brought it back is just because of exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. When I became the interim chief of police and I went to meetings all over the city, every single meeting I went to, somebody stood up and said, "Why don't you have officer friendly?"
I mean, it was effective.
Yeah.
So if it works, keep it going.
And the key to it, you know, is really not giving the kids the safety tips. That's part of it. But really the value I see in it is having young people at a very young age to see police officers as human beings.
I totally agree.
Yep.
I do want to ask you about the changing face of the department. I have talked to a lot of officers who have said, "Oh yeah, this is my last year. I'm retiring. I've been on the, you know, in the department, you know, 30 years or whatever the case may be." And so what we are seeing, Chief, is I'm hearing from the community that we don't have enough people of color. We need black and brown officers. How are you doing with the makeup of the force, of the department? Because people feel more comfortable around people who look like them or at least have a similar background, come from the same community. That is also an effective tool in policing in any community.
Your police department has to reflect the community that they serve.
How are we doing with that?
Oh, we're doing great. Matter of fact, D.C. MPD has a long history of having a police department demographically that matches the community that we serve. And right now, if you looked at the demographics of our police department and you matched it to the demographics of Washington, D.C., we match it almost exactly. The one demographic where we don't match, do you know what that is?
Women.
Women.
I knew you were going to say it.
We need more women on the police department.
How are you going to do that? What do you do to make women want to do this?
You know what? We run about 21%, which is high for other police agencies in the country. But we are making a concerted effort to get women into the job of policing. And I think what we need
What makes it attractive to a woman to want to do it?
It's a service industry. If you want to come out and you want to help people, and this is what I tell people all the time, you know, I could have done a lot of things, in my lifetime. I kind of fell into policing when I was about 25 years old. Best decision I ever made in my life. But I can tell you with honesty, I can look back at the last 30 years and feel like I've done something that was worthwhile. And if anybody is out there and they want to be involved in a profession, man or woman, where you can spend 30, 35 years in a job and look back and feel like you've done something productive, we're hiring.
Trying to get some women to join the force. Okay, let me go back to the phone lines here at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Hey, caller, what's your name?
Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Darlene.
Darlene, what's your question or comment for the chief?
Well, my question and comment, I guess, is a little of both.
is that as an African-American woman, mother, and I'm a mother of all girls, but I have nephews, it's often very distressing for me to see my sisters who often worry about their sons who are African-American, driving, that type of thing. And I know that my nephews are good guys, but it's still a major, major worry that we as African-American women have to endure versus my coworkers who are majority Caucasian. That's not a worry for them.
Okay. Do you have a do you want to ask the chief a specific question based on that, ma'am?
I would like to. I would like to know what types of things could we put in place to help that, you know, African-American mother or whomever. What can we do to really reassure?
I think that's a great question. Chief?
Yeah, that is a great question. And so, you know, when I listen to a question like that, it really, it hurts to feel or to know that there are people in our community when they get pulled over by our police officers that they're in fear. And I don't want that ever to be the case. And so really...
you know that is a reality.
Oh, that's a
you
reality. Know. No doubt about it. It's a reality. And so I guess one of my, if not one of my number one priorities is to make sure that people don't feel that way about our police department. And what that requires is that, particularly when we have a lot of new officers, you said, and we are hiring a lot of new officers, make them understand that when they go into any kind of an interaction with anybody in this community, they got to try and make it a positive one. They really do. I mean, I hear across this city people who are having really wonderful interactions with members of the Metropolitan Police Department, and then guess what happens? We got one cop who does something really stupid, and we all see it on the news. You know what I mean? Nobody sees the day-to-day touching of human beings that the police department does, giving people directions, finding missing persons, helping people who are the victims of crimes, all of the things that we do on a daily basis. And then you get one cop, and he blows it for us all. So what I would say to Darlene is that hopefully you and your family doesn't feel that way when you're stopped by the Metropolitan Police Department.
Darlene, thank you for your call. Okay, let's get another caller in here, Chief. 202-319-7810. Hello there. What's your name?
Hi, my name is Adria.
Adria?
Yes.
Okay, what's your question or comment?
I just wanted to say that the chief is being very modest. I'm actually a civilian employee with MPD.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to give a big, big thank you to the things that the guys do. A lot of times their holidays are taken. They do shifts well beyond 40-hour weeks. They go out in the community. They help out with the children. So it's a lot of things where they have police presence, and they lose a lot of time with their own families to try to solve cases and really work diligently. So I know firsthand, being a civilian employee, just how hard they work. So.
Thank you.
I wanted to commit him.
Adria, thank you so much. That is well noted.
Well,
I appreciate it.
I did not ask
you
Adria.
You didn't plant her.
No, I did not plant her to call.
Thank
but
you,
Adria, we appreciate you calling in. It's a good point that you know, the men and women who work this job oftentimes have to sacrifice their personal lives to do it. And at the end of the day, I think most of them are really happy to do that.
Thank you. And for the callers who are still holding, hold on for just a second. I want to ask the chief about this question that has come to me. Again, the number to call is 202-319-7810. Slip your call in, your question or comment in before the chief has to leave. Rafel Edmond, there is that question about whether to let him out early. This was the, you know, people know, the notorious drug kingpin. When I was in high school, you know, his girlfriends and I were in the same classes. We were on the cheerleading team together. Well known. But since he's been in prison, you know, prosecutors who locked him up say they want to let him out early because he's helped nab other criminals. What are your thoughts?
So what I would say is, and I know that the Attorney General has been given the responsibility for holding some meetings to hear from the community about how, you know, and to give this feedback to Judge Sullivan over at District Court, whether or not Rafel Edmond's sentence should be reduced. And so I would say that hopefully they will get feedback from, because Rafael Edmonds and his crew was responsible for, we know, 30 murders here in the District of Columbia. I would hope that they would get feedback from those families as to what they think about this. Maybe to get some feedback from people who were addicted to crack cocaine during that time. Maybe get some feedback from people whose lives were destroyed. You know, Rafael Edmonds did provide the government with information that led to the arrest of some other very, very dangerous folks. But at the end of the day, he cannot just absolve himself of the responsibility for some of the damage that he caused. So I feel, and I think most people would expect this from a law enforcement officer. I feel very strongly that when you have crimes like this, you have somebody like that who's responsible for it, that we need to hear from the victims.
Is there a danger, though, in other criminals not cooperating? He cooperated because he wanted to get something out of the deal.
And
so
he did.
The danger.
His mother was released early.
He wanted something for his family.
And he did get a benefit from that. And I think that was appropriate to allow his mother, if that was something that he wanted. But I also think, like I said, because of the extent of the criminal activity that he was involved in, you really need to talk to some of the victims.
Got it. All right. I do have another caller I want to get in before we have to let you go, Chief. Hello there. What's your name? Are you there, caller?
Hello?
Yes. Hello. What's your name?
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda. What's your question or comment for the Chief? He's here. He's listening.
Yes. Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on the comment made by the first caller. I believe her name was Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand what the chief was speaking about, having programs in certain areas, but I wanted to speak more towards police presence. It seems like in the gentrified, revitalized neighborhoods, there are oftentimes squad cars stationary in the neighborhoods, or at least police patrolling the neighborhoods frequently, whereas in other neighborhoods, that is not the case. There is very little police presence in those areas.
Okay, let's have the chief.
Yeah, that's not the first time that I've gotten that question, Linda. And just so you know, the way that we allocate resources on the police department, our 6th and our 7th districts, which are in wards 7 and 8, and those are the two wards that have been most plagued with violent crime in our city, have more police officers than any of our other districts. We also have most of the officers that are assigned to our Narcotics and Special Investigations Division spend the lion's share of their time east of the river when they're conducting a lot of their law enforcement operations. So not most of our resources, but a significant amount of the resources that we allocate for MPD allocated in that area. If you are not seeing police visibly in your community, then I hope that you can share that with me. And you could send me an email. You could send the district commander an email. And we will try to increase visibility in your community.
You said you have more police officers assigned, more narcotics officers assigned to some of those more troubled communities. The callers have talked about patrols.
Right.
They want to see those cars going down the streets, up and down the streets.
Absolutely.
Is that happening?
It depends on what's going on. So if we have an area that we think that something's going to happen because of intelligence that we have, we may have to move resources over into that area. But generally, they should see police officers patrolling their communities.
Because I think that the optics of that will help alleviate some concerns. Obviously, people want to see.
Yeah.
They just want to see.
One of the things, too, I think that I should mention, because we just went through the budget process, mm-hmm. is, you know, the mayor had put into the budget to increase the size of the police department to 4,000. And the council cut some of that money and may prevent us from being able to get up to 4,000 in this next fiscal year.
Okay. Very interesting
point.
And
so I mentioned that to folks who are listening, that if you think you want to see more police visible in your community, getting the police department up to 4,000 is one way to do it.
Up to 4,000. Okay. Make a phone call to your representative.
Yeah. Call your council member. Be involved.
All right. Okay, I think we have to take a break now on the Daily Drums Insight segment. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back, everyone, to the Daily Drums Insight segment. I'm Alec Green. in for Harold Fisher tonight. We have been talking to Police Chief Peter Newsham of the Metropolitan Police Department. We had a deal with him that he would stay 45 minutes, and he stayed a little over 45 minutes, but the chief is now gone. So we had the police chief talk about a number of things, including the plan for stepped up enforcement. The chief saying that in the more troubled areas of the city where there's higher crime, there are more narcotics officers assigned and more police officers. The chief says if you want more patrols, if you don't see the patrols, to give them a call. And he also put out the call for folks in the city to call their local council members, their assigned council members, their representation, because he wants to get the numbers up on the force to 4,000. I know many of you have been concerned about the face of the Metropolitan Police Department, seeing more black and brown officers in the community. The chief addressed that point as well, along with efforts to do more preventive crime tactics, including the Summer Crime Initiative, which he says they have activated, along with Community Engagement Academy. That's a 6-week program that allows interested community members to learn about police operations. They're bringing back and keeping Officer Friendly for now. That has been a program that went away and people have called for it to come back. There, of course, will be the upcoming National Night Out annual event that occurs in each district on the first Tuesday in August. So there are some crime initiatives. But we did hear from the police chief say that there were more people calling in with tips in the community. And one important thing that I want to stress that we heard is you do not have to give your name or your number. If you want to call in with a tip about a crime, the officer on the other end will ask, but you do not have to give that information. Just give your tip so that we can close some of these cases. We talked about that beautiful mural that's now up on Wheeler Road in Southeast D.C. of Maurice Scott. Beautiful mural, but it should not be that a 15-year-old is put up on a mural because he was shot and killed over the long holiday, Memorial Holiday weekend. We are in this city concerned about crime. As a reporter, I cover crime. As a citizen who has family members in the city, I am concerned about the crime in the city. And so the police chief, of course, coming in tonight to answer all of your phone calls. The hope is that we will have the police chief come back periodically to be able to answer some questions that you and the community have about what is going on in our fair city. It's been a pleasure sitting in for Harold Fisher tonight. I'm Molette Green on the Daily Drums Insight segment. We will see you again tomorrow this time. Join us with your questions or your comments on the Insight segment. Have a good evening, everyone.